You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up on our summer music series set list, we'll hear from Madison band Neens, who describe their sound as dream goth pop. First, it's time for our weekly review of state news, the Wisconsin News Roundup. Lawmakers from both sides of the aisle made news during the Democrat-led sit-in at the U.S. House of Representatives this week, and a study came out looking at the effects of Act 10 on teacher salaries and union membership during the 5 years after that bill was passed. Rob Menzer joins us to talk about those stories and more. He's a storytelling editor for the USA Today Network Wisconsin, based in Wausau. Rob, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, first up this week, Democrats staged a sit-in in the U.S. House of Representatives to try to get a vote on some gun measures, and some Wisconsin representatives, of course, were involved. What do we know about that Wisconsin involvement?
Yeah, so this was quite the piece of political theater this week in the U.S. House of Representatives. This was, I mean, there were more than 200 Democrats on Wednesday overnight and into through most of Thursday that held this sit-in. So from Wisconsin, we saw there were, you know, selfies posted to social media from Representative Mark Pocan and Gwen Moore. They were joined by Senator Tammy Baldwin, who walked over to the House to show support for her colleagues over there, and at least for part of the time, Representative Ron Kind. So Wisconsin's Democrats were well represented at the big sit-in.
And Speaker Paul Ryan, of course, was there for part of that. And here's what he had to say.
If a person is on a terror watch list and they go try to buy a gun, we have procedures in place to deal with that. We want to make sure that those procedures are done correctly. And that's something we should be able to do in a calm and cool manner, without these sort of dilatory publicity stunt tactics to try and bring a bill that already died over in the Senate to the House floor.
And a clip there of House Speaker Paul Ryan. And Rob, what is your take on Paul Ryan's response?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's, you know, he's calling it a publicity stunt, which is clearly what it was. I mean, it was designed to create publicity around the House's lack of action on gun laws. It's just whether or not you feel that that is like a worthy of publicity probably depends on your stance on the underlying issue. So, I mean, it was an act of protest. It was counter to House rules. It was a sort of a mini government shutdown in that way. And those who support the action argue that extraordinary measures are required to get action on gun laws. But certainly, you know, it's not wrong to say that it was designed for publicity and designed to call attention to that they're breaking rules here.
And I think it was Paul Ryan who pointed out that in 2008, Republicans were in the minority party, and he said they did something similar and the lights got turned off. So it seems as though this can happen on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, and it's sort of not, you know, it's hard to feel great about the idea that this is just a tactic that is, you know, will become a sort of a standard political tactic in Congress. But you know, maybe that's, well, first of all, maybe that's where we are with a highly polarized Congress. But also it really gets to the frustration that folks on the sort of on the liberal side of the aisle feel about a lack of movement on gun laws. Some of these, you know, it does include measures that are broadly popular that have been brought up in the past. In this case, though, it's worth looking at what the sort of underlying substance of the bill is. Speaker Ryan referred to it in the clip you played. It's about barring people from the no-fly list from getting from being able to purchase a gun. And of course, the problem with that has been pointed out by people on the left and on the right, that there's no way to really appeal that. There's no sort of due process about getting on the no-fly list or getting yourself off of it, and it's kind of can be sort of arbitrary and unreliable in the first place. So there's been in addition to a lot of, you know, plaudits for Democrats who stood up in this way, there's been criticism that, you know, is this really the bill to sort of, is this the hill to fight and die on?
Now, over in the Senate, Senator Ron Johnson attempted to introduce an amendment to a bill on gun control, and here he is trying to gain support for it.
Here's something we can all agree on. Nobody in this chamber, no American, wants to see weapons transferred into the hands of terrorists or would-be terrorists. We can agree on that. We are so close. We are so close.
And Rob, what can you tell us about what Senator Ron Johnson had to say?
So Johnson had a bill that would have been rather weaker than the proposed Democratic ban on buying guns if you're on the no-fly list. It would have allowed the government to like delay firearm purchases. It would have been 3 business days. If you're on the no-fly list, you can't buy a gun for 3 whole days. Or it could be extended with a special appeal for a U.S. attorney, or it could ultimately be denied if a judge ruled that there's a reasonable basis to do so. So, you know, Senator Johnson's argument is that that introduces that element of due process that others say was missing. There was another similar bill introduced by Susan Collins of Maine, another Republican. And so there was an attempt to pass these bills. Neither one passed. Johnson got only 31 votes in favor of his bill. 67 senators opposed it. And the reason was it was too weak for the Democrats. They didn't think it was restrictive enough. But then he also lost a bunch of conservative Republicans who thought it was too, you know, that even that was still too restrictive.
We're talking to Rob Menser right now, storytelling editor for the USA Today Network, Wisconsin, based in Wausau. We're getting our Wisconsin news roundup right now. And also in the news this week, a study came out looking at how salaries for teachers in Wisconsin have changed since Act 10. First off, where did the study come from?
Yeah, so this is a study from the Wisconsin Institute for Liberty and Law. So it's a conservative think tank, and you know the it should be understood as the product of a conservative think tank. But they did crunch some real numbers, and you can argue with their conclusions, or at least you know take it with a grain of salt. But what they did was they looked at data from the State Department of Public Instruction and from the Federal Department of Education to try to crunch the numbers on the effects of Act 10. One key, you know, a sort of a headline finding or a very interesting finding is they found that teachers in Wisconsin make overall $2,000 less in base pay today than they did before Act 10 5 years ago.
And there were other findings here. Essentially, the gist, it sounds like, of the findings was that the drastic changes that may have been foretold by critics of Act 10, they say, according to this study, didn't necessarily come to fruition. What were some of those other findings?
For sure. They tried to look at, for instance, class sizes. So class sizes didn't particularly increase. The overall experience level of Wisconsin's teaching workforce didn't significantly decrease. So, you know, there are trying to check claims that were made about what could happen, sort of mass migrations, loss of experience in the workforce, and they say that didn't happen. They also point out, I mean, it's a conservative group, they estimate that about $5 billion in savings to state taxpayers in the 5 years since the law passed. So there's sort of, you know, there's sort of something for everyone, right? You can focus on the way that that teacher salaries decrease as a potentially a negative outcome, or you can spin some of the data in a more positive sense as well.
And Rob, just super briefly as we wrap up here, less than a minute, but tell us about the conclusion of this story about that famous Iwo Jima photo and who the mystery Marine was in this.
Yeah, so the U.S. Marines finally reached a conclusion on this, and it was, in fact, not Wisconsin man John Bradley, a Navy man from Appleton and who lived in Anago. He was there, but he was not in the famous photo. He was he took part in the first flag raising on Iwo Jima, not the second. The Marine Corps thinks that it was a guy named Private First Class Harold Schultz. He died in 1995. He apparently never told anyone that he was actually the guy in this famous photo.
Rob, thanks a lot for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks so much.
That was Robert Menser, storytelling editor for the USA Today Network, Wisconsin. He joins us every week for our Wisconsin News Roundup. This is Central Time.